Welcome to the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quilt Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dow, and we're reading my work-in-progress friendship album, 1934. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quilt Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Chapter 2. "Does it look like snow to you?" Bess asked Edwina as they stood at the living room window watching for Joe's car. "Because the only thing worse than Florence's wedding getting canceled again because of a blizzard would be us getting stuck in the church because of a blizzard." "And a Presbyterian church at that," Edwina said, shaking her head. "First Presbyterian is so awfully plain. It's like they're afraid someone might actually enjoy themselves at some point during the Sunday service." Bess shook her head. "Why do people think God doesn't want us to have some pleasure here on earth? After all, the earth is filled with pleasurable things. Flowers, trees, babies." "Eula Baker's chocolate cake," Edwina added, "and her coffee. What exactly does she do to make it so good?" Bess shrugged. "I've asked her for a secret, but she says there isn't one." "Do you believe her?" Edwina wanted to know, not to suggest that she's one to prevaricate. "Well, there's lying about something, and then there's not revealing the entire truth," Bess offered. "Eula wouldn't be the first woman to forget a special ingredient. Having said that, I can't imagine her lying, prevaricating, or forgetting. I think she simply has the magic touch when it comes to coffee." Joe's car came into view, and Bess called upstairs to her daughters. "Girls, it's time to leave for church. Hurry, please. We don't want to keep Father Mayfield, waiting." "Do you have a magic touch for anything?" Edwina asked Bess as the two women put on their coats and collected their purses. "I mean, I know you're awfully good at so many things, making quilts, raising daughters, baking pies. But is there something you do especially well, without much effort?" "Eat," Bess laughed. "I believe I have a special gift for putting food in my mouth." Edwina joined in Bess's laughter. "It's a gift we share, my dear. I certainly hope I'll hear no more talk of reducing from you. The fact is, men like women a little on the plump side. My Charles always said a little cushioning on a woman was a wonderful thing." Bess smiled. "Bill was the same way, bless him. I really do hate dieting." Bess felt a sudden twinge of guilt at the sight of Joe Mayfield emerging from the sedan parked in front of her house, though she wasn't sure why. Because she'd been speaking of Bill only a moment before? Surely Joe, a widower himself, would understand Bess entertaining happy memories of her deceased husband. And she couldn't imagine steady, sensible Bill objecting to Bess's happiness with Joe. He wouldn't. Would he? "Oh, stop behaving like an adult girl," she scolded herself. Bill would want her to be happy. After all, that's what he'd wanted when he was alive. Surely he'd continue to hope for her happiness. Of course he would. Thankfully, her daughter's footsteps pounding down the stairs interrupted Bess's troublesome train of thought. Jane looked pretty but uncomfortable in her floral print crepe dress with a jaunty white bow at the neck, and the ever-stylish Helen appeared sophisticated. A little too sophisticated for Bess's taste, in her bias-cut pink jersey knit dress that she'd gotten as a Christmas present from Bess's mother. "I was so busy reading about neutron stars that I forgot all about eating lunch," Jane announced when she arrived in the foyer. "Will they be serving supper after the wedding? If not, could we go to Linway's?" "Oh, could we, Mother?" Helen chimed in. "Joe loves it as much as we do, after all." "Father Mayfield," Bess corrected her, "and the light supper will be served after the wedding. If it's not enough to satisfy you, I don't see why we couldn't top ourselves off at Linway's with a little something, if only to celebrate Florence finally getting her wedding. The poor girl has waited long enough for it. What are we to call Father Mayfield when you get married, Mother? Jane asked as she pulled on her coat. He won't expect us to call him Dad, will he? I think that question is a little premature, Bess told her daughter, and I'm sure you and Joe will be able to work that out should the day ever come. He's going to be terribly disappointed if he wants me to call him anything other than Father Joe, Helen said, pulling her hat on her head with a decided tug. That's the only kind of father he'll ever be to me. Edwina arched an eyebrow. You sound as if you don't like him, Helen. That can't be, can it? He's such a nice man. Helen's tone softened. No, I like Father Joe very much. She turned to Bess. Sorry, Mother, I'm just in a mood. Bess refrained from commenting, instead giving her daughter a sympathetic smile. Helen was frequently in a mood. Bess's eldest daughter, Annie, now married with a baby, had been a bit like that. Her middle child, Jane, not at all. Helen's emotions ran consistently high, which made her company in turns entertaining and a bit hard to bear. Let's not continue this discussion in front of Joe, she suggested, opening the door and ushering her daughters out. I can't imagine he'd enjoy it. Edwina laughed. I think he'd revel in it. I'm willing to wager that he'll propose before the first bloom is on the cherry tree. Bess waved away her friend's words. Honestly, Edwina, sometimes you're as romantic as... Well, I don't know who. I was going to say Juliet, but she came to such a tragic end. Edwina held onto Bess's arm as they walked out the door. I'll stop, but you know it's what I want for you. Bess did know. It was certainly a notion that she had entertained herself on more than one occasion, but she wasn't in any hurry. There were so many logistical details that would have to be worked through if she were to marry Joe. For instance, where would they live? In Bess's house, one would think. After all, it wouldn't be fair to move Helen out of the only home she'd ever known and make her take up residence in St. Luke's dark and drafty rectory. Then there was the question of Edwina, who had only recently moved in with Bess and her family. Would Joe want to start married life with a third adult as part of the household? Even one as delightful as Edwina Baldwin? Well, whatever happened next, Bess would never kick Edwina to the curb. The two women had joined forces when Edwina had found herself in need of a new home, and Bess was looking for ways to hold on to the house she'd raised her family in. Any reservations Bess might have had about opening her home had dissipated almost immediately upon the older woman's arrival. Besides being a marvelous conversationalist and a repository of wisdom, Edwina was a calm presence in the midst of a family that was still recovering its footing after two unsettling years that included not only Bill's sudden death, but also Annie's difficult pregnancy, which happily concluded with the birth of Bess's first grandchild, dear Will. Jane and Helen had almost immediately adopted Edwina as an honorary grandmother, Jane seeking her out for advice about her course of study next year at Ashland College, and Helen using her as a sounding board for her daily crises. It had only been a matter of a few weeks before Bess felt the older woman an indispensable part of the family. Joe met them on the sidewalk and placed his hand on Edwina's arm. Edwina, why don't you sit up front with me? I don't want to see that marvelous bonnet you're wearing get crushed. Thank you, Father, Edwina said, patting her hat. I had it made many years ago when Charles and I went to Paris. It's called a velour pouf à touche, which I believe means something along the lines of a puffy ostrich feather hat. Sounds better in French, don't you think? Everything sounds better in French, Helen said, a note of longing in her voice. L'amour, le bisou. There's nothing wrong with English, Jane complained as she ducked into the car. Stop being so lovey-dovey about things. Well, we're going to a wedding, aren't we? Helen replied, taking a seat next to her sister. I can't think of a better time to be lovey-dovey, can you? Bess and Edwina glanced at each other. That was another reason Bess liked having Edwina around. Their thoughts often circled the same track. Bess wasn't much one for romance stories, but she did hope that today's wedding would have a storybook ending. Two healthy, handsome young people joining their lives together after long last. Things should work out, shouldn't they? But Florence and Arthur had a long history of things not working out between them. Bess wasn't going to accept their marriage as a given until she heard the vows recited and affirmed. In spite of the cold, a small crowd was milling about in front of the church when they got there. Upon seeing them, Emmeline rushed over to Bess and Edwina. "We're waiting for Florence's arrival," she explained breathlessly. "Oh, I can't wait for you to see her dress. It's so elegant and just right for the older bride." "Florence is only 28," Bess pointed out. "She's not exactly ancient." "No, of course not," Emmeline said with a shake of her head. "But she's not a young girl either, and she shouldn't dress like one. That's why I'm so glad she opted for a 3/4-length dress instead of a gown that fell all the way to the floor. And it's ivory instead of snow white." "To suggest that the bloom is off the rose?" Edwina offered, her tone amused. "Or that she's a bit antiquated?" "Edwina, you're awful," Emmeline pouted. "A wedding dress signifies, but it should do so subtly. Ivory is a subtle color, a subdued color." "I'm sure Florence will look lovely, whatever her dress is trying to tell us," Edwina said. "Really, what I'm most concerned about is the groom. Is he here?" "He's inside with his brother," Emmeline told her. "Looking very handsome, I might add." "I think that's the nicest thing I've ever heard you say about Arthur." Bess smiled at her friend. "Are you warming up to the idea of Florence marrying him?" "My dear, my feelings on the matter are no longer the least bit relevant," Emmeline declared. "I've stated my case more than once, as we all know, and now it's time to accept the inevitable. I will do whatever I can to support the happy couple and feel only the warmest feelings toward the groom, while at the same time letting him know that I've got my eye on him." A smile played around Edwina's mouth. "Are you worried he'll abscond with the silverware?" "Oh, I'd be happy if that were all." Emmeline didn't finish. "Oh, there's Eula. So no more talk of Arthur Purefoy. Doesn't she look nice, though?" Eula walked toward them, pulling Maisie by the hand. "Will someone please tell this child there's no crime in looking pretty?" Maisie scowled. "I'm fine with looking nice, but pretty is just unnecessary." "Sadly for you, it's true," Bess commiserated with the girl. "You look very pretty. It's terrible, I know." "You're teasing me, Miss Bess," Maisie complained, "but I'm serious." Jane walked over to Maisie and draped an arm around her shoulder. "I don't like being noticed either, not for what I'm wearing, at least." Maisie nodded vigorously. "That's right. If you want to compliment my chickens, I'm fine with that. But leave my clothes out of it, and don't even start talking about my curls." "Shall we go inside then and get out of the limelight?" Jane asked, and with that, the two girls walked up the church steps. Jane paused at the top and turned to Helen. "You're welcome to join us." "Oh, no, I want to see Florence the minute she arrives," Helen told her sister. "But save me a seat so I can give you the full report." "I'll do my best," Jane said, her expression suggesting she'd do no such thing. If anyone had less interest in talking about dresses than Maisie, Bess knew it was her middle child. "Is the bride here yet?" Dorothy joined the circle, her granddaughter Alice by her side. "Alice made Wallace drive like a demon to get us here in time to see Florence before she walked down the aisle." "We're still waiting," Bess assured her. "Is Wallace coming to the service?"
"Not on your life," Dorothy replied. "But Hannah's coming with her cousins, so the family will be well represented."
"Is Wallace not a man for weddings?" Emmeline asked.
"He doesn't mind a down-home-style wedding, which is the kind we had. Just our families and the preacher down at the old home place. He said a society wedding like this was no place for a milkman."
Eula's husband Dan, just then appearing at her side, tugged at his tie.
"Tell Mr. Johnson that I wish I'd known attendance was optional."
"Oh, there's a price to be paid for his absence," Dorothy assured him. "He's over at Hannah's, keeping an eye on all the grandbabies."
"Except for me," Alice pointed out.
"Except for you," Dorothy agreed. "That's because I knew you would behave yourself." A sudden shout of, "Here they are!" caused the crowd to surge toward the sidewalk.
"Here we go," Bess thought.
Taking a deep breath, she followed her friends to the stretch of curb in front of the church that had been reserved for Florence's chariot, or, in this case, her brother Thomas's Packard. Emmeline reached over and grabbed Bess's hand.
"Let's pray this time everything works out. If Florence is going to go through with this wedding, I want it to be wonderful from beginning to end."
It was hard to disagree with that, Bess thought as she watched Thomas Grangerfield emerge from the car. Florence's eldest brother, and Emmeline's husband, looked dapper in his gray, double-breasted, drape-cut suit. Emmeline squeezed Bess's hand.
"Something's wrong," she whispered.
"How can you tell?" Bess whispered back.
"Nothing's happened yet."
"I can read that man's face like a book," Emmeline replied. "I don't think this is a happy chapter." As if on cue, Thomas waved to the gathered attendees.
"I'm afraid Florence isn't ready," he announced.
"Should we go home and come back later?" someone called out.
"How long will it be?"
another voice chimed in. Thomas cleared his throat before speaking.
"I think it might be some time."
He paused for a moment and then sighed.
"I think it might be never."
Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast. We're reading Friendship Album 1934, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dow, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.